Good morning, 7:52 here on the Mighty 690. James Coover joins us now from K-State Research and Extension. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good.
Thanks for being patient.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Eternity Journal's top 10, so.
I'd say, you know, they think they're allowed to do what they want there. So, yeah. we're happy to have Mr. Derek Schmidt with us. So, but anyway, it's all K-State stuff now this morning. And yep. First of all, I heard you talking a little bit when we might have played one of your features about planting winter wheat, and there is still time, apparently.
Yes, and so there's still some time to plant winter wheat. We're not out of the time frame yet, and hopefully it's going to rain here in a few days,
yeah.
And so that's going to help the situation too. But you know, right now we're getting to the point when planting wheat is kind of late. And so generally we like to plant wheat sometime between October 10th to October 20th. That's your traditional window. So now that we're in November, we've got to make some adjustments. And a lot of people, farmers, they've already got their wheat in. Some farmers are still, there's still soybeans in the field, and they're going to plant after the soybeans. And so, you know, that's fine. I would say when you start to get into the 1st of December, that's when it starts to be too late, honestly, for the extreme southeast Kansas down here. Insurance dates start to cut off about November the 15th. So ideally, you want to get your wheat in before then, because every day after that, it's less and less. Before the last rain, the wheat looked pretty good. And, I mean, you can see out there as you drive along, the fields are nice and green. They got little weedies coming up. And then, you know, after the last rain, if you got the wheat in right then, it still hasn't quite germinated yet, but I'm pretty sure it's going to look good too with this rain that's coming up. So we've actually had a pretty good fall for getting something out there. And it's good because right now the markets are up too. So we planted in November. You're going into colder soils, so you have to make adjustments. It has less time to winterize, and so that's going to be an issue. Populations, they need to be higher, actually, to compensate for less tillers. That's despite whether we're expecting more drought or anything like that. I mean, the populations just need to be higher because it's not going to branch out as much. And so each week past October 20th, we need to increase our seeding rate by about 10,000 or 100,000 seeds per acre. It seems like a lot, but that's pretty normal for wheat.
It does seem like a lot.
And so normal for a field is about 1.1 to 1.4 million seeds per acre. Generally, we go by pounds, but you need to like convert your poundage over so that way you know the number of seeds you're planting. The max that you should go to is 1.4 to 1.7 million seeds. And so 1.7 million seeds, that's around 120 pounds. Per acre, but it is always best to plant seeds by number. And so most farmers is just, you know, I'm planting 100 pounds of seed, whatever. But there's a vast difference between some sizes of seeds in wheat. Soybeans, corn, there's a little bit of homogeneity there. Wheat is very different from one type to another.
It almost kind of reminds me like weighing your flour versus, you know, putting in a measuring cup,
exactly.
Sort of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, you can smush that flour down. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, Everest is a usually pretty big seed. Maybe you're doing some bin run wheat and it's much smaller. And I mean, there can be a 50% difference.
Wow.
And I mean, that's a 50% population difference. And so it's huge. You gotta plant by the number of seeds. Basically, on the seed bag, you can do the math. I mean, it's got right on there how many seeds per pound, times it out, and then you're planting by pounds in the field. And if you don't do that, you can actually count the seeds a few times and weigh it on a gram scale and do that count yourself too. If you plant this time of year, the roots aren't going to expand as much over the winter, and they're not going to expand as much before they winterize too. And so the main concern for nutrients wise is phosphorus, because phosphorus is such an immobile nutrient that those roots won't have time to expand out and find that phosphorus. So we have to think about high fertility when it comes to phosphorus, even beyond what the normal recommendations are. So starter fertilizer, it's not common in wheat. Most of the time we're talking about corn, we're talking about starter fertilizer. But if you have the capability of it, it's a really good idea for late planted wheat this late to think about phosphorus fertilizer. Also fungicide seed treatments are also very important, because that seed's going to be in the ground longer. And so all that time, fungus is actually attacking it. insecticide seed treatment is probably actually less important, but it's already on there, so you might as well, you know, it's kind of comes in a package, honestly, the fungicide, insecticide, seed treatments. So, more time in the soil, you know, you got to get those seed treatments on there. For right now, when we're talking about other fertilizers, basically pre-plant fertilizers, 20 to 30 pounds of nitrogen is really all that's needed, because we don't have a whole lot of time left before winterization. So, the rest of that, the nitrogen, you're going to be top dressing in the spring, so don't need to worry about that too much. But remember that the drought likely left more nitrogen in the fields if it was after corn. And so we fertilized our corn real heavy in the spring. We never really got that corn out of it. There's nowhere for that nitrogen to have gone over the summer. And so a lot of wheat fields probably have more nitrogen than what we expected. I think a lot of farmers are already compensating for that. And although right now, most of our fields are actually being planted after soybeans. Soybeans, they do not leave nitrogen in the soil. Even though they're nitrogen fixators, they take it all with them. I mean, there's a little bit left over from the stems and the leaves for the summer crops. Not that much. And for wheat, we don't get any credit because it's just the wrong time frame. So, no nitrogen credit after the soybeans. Soybeans do, however, suck up a whole lot of sulfur. They are very sulfur hungry. So if you after wheat after soybeans, you're going to need some sort of addition of some kind of sulfur is going to help. Not so much in the fall, but in the spring. That's going to be a very important aspect. So, you know, with our late planted wheat, really it's just increasing the number, getting at the right time. Don't do something weird with the seed depths. You know, the normal inch to 2 inches is ideal. You want to get down there into the moisture, but not so deep that you're going to risk winter kill. We need at least one tiller and 4 to 5 leaves before wheat is full winter hardy. Then this is not to say that if we get into like the mid-20s, lower 20s, there's still going to be some protection there. I'm talking like full winter hardy. That's in the teens and sure. Below.
And I'm going to have to hold you over just a sec because we got to get to the top of the hour. We'll be right back right after this. Back here on the Mighty 690, continuing our discussion with James Coover, and we also have Wendy Powell with us. So good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Good morning. So well, let's see, where were we? We had just finished talking about late planting of wheat and moving on into interseeding into pastures.
Yeah, and so, you know, with the late planted wheat, actually Wendy was going to talk a little bit about grazing it. And so that's something that we really commonly like to do around here. But when you plant this late, it starts to get questionable how you're going to do that.
Yeah, so if you're going to go to the expense and the time and labor of putting these cool season plants in the ground, then we definitely want to make for sure that we're grazing it properly or utilizing it properly. It is possible, I don't know about late planted wheat, but go ahead and do some grazing on early planted wheat and then go ahead and let it head out for a crop. So there is that dual purpose system, but you have to get out into those fields and make for sure that you're actually looking at the plants. And so that is something that we need to be doing regardless of what type of cool season forage we're using. We need to get our boots wet out there in the dew and check and see what stage those plants are at. So with the wheat, we don't want to start grazing that until it's, the books say 6 inches. You definitely want to be cognizant that those plants are able to have those leaves up there to collect the photosynthesis and get that down to the roots before you put animals out into those fields. I mean, if you have an animal out there grazing on a 2-inch plant, they're just going to pull the whole plant up and then you're not going to have anything to work with next week. So that's what we're seeing multiplied in these pastures that are drought stricken, which is a lot of our pastures. So we're kind of in an emergency forage situation. So this late planted wheat is something that if you're going to go through the expense and the time of putting it in, make for sure that you are out there looking at the plants and taking care of them so that they will last you longer throughout the grazing season.
Yeah. And so, you know, also, when we're talking about late planted wheat, we can also talk about interseeding into pastures, like you had mentioned. And so, right now, our fescue looks pretty bad out there. You know,
really?
And, Wendy has gone out there and looked, and I mean, there's huge dead spots all over the place, especially the pastures that have been kind of not really abused. It's just there was nowhere else to put the cows. They had to go somewhere. Yeah. And so these pastures, they've been eaten down. They look like a golf course, but they look like a dead golf course. Mm-hmm. And so there's really not a whole lot there. And so what we can talk about is actually interseeding into those pastures. It's not a thing that we normally do, but when half the pasture is not there anymore, that leaves a whole lot of blank spot for something. And so that something could actually be some sort of grass crop that you basically drill into that pasture. And this, a lot of producers are actually thinking about this, and they're doing that right now. Mm-hmm. And so I was just on the drill yesterday interseeding into some of our fescue pastures. So because there's going to be a whole lot of fescue, is, you know, it gets real thick this time of year, usually, but it's going to be slow recovery. It's just because it's perennial nature. It's going to recover very slowly. Lots of sparse, the crowns aren't quite dead, but they're going to be very sparse. And so the Bermuda, of course, it's done time of this year, and same thing with the native, but it's going to recover next year slowly as well. And so Wendy can probably talk about, you know, how to treat those pastures right until they happen. But right now, the interseeding can actually act as, in a way, a nursery crop. So fluffing those pastures up and getting a perennial or an annual in there for a temporary grazing.
Oh, okay, sure.
And so some of the grasses that we're talking about here, ryegrass, cereal rye, and sometimes those two are confused, barley, wheat, and triticale, basically our grasses. It's kind of too late for broadleafs. I mean, if it was much earlier, we could talk about putting in some sort of clover or something like that. If you put in clover now, I'm a little bit worried it's going to germinate. Because if it germinates and then it freezes, it's going to die. If it doesn't germinate, it'll just germinate in the spring. We'll be fine. Right now, we're in the perfect window where I'm a little bit worried about it. So I wouldn't do that. But the differences between some of these grasses, barley, wheat, triticale, they're similar in nature. A lot of the time you'll be putting wheat in there just because that's what farmers have, honestly. Barley might be a little bit harder to get a hold of, but they kind of start off slow a little bit, and then they'll take off really well in the spring. And so they'll get pretty big later on. Same thing with triticale. It's a mixture between rye and wheat. Rye grass is the one that's a little bit different. Rye grass is different than cereal rye. Cereal rye is the big seed. It's a lot more like wheat and barley. Ryegrass is a much smaller seed. It's got a huge root system to it most of the time. It doesn't take off. It doesn't have quite the cold tolerance as cereal rye does. But this time of year, I mean, it could still get growing pretty well. I don't know which one is best. I honestly don't. Between the five that you can get, I'm not sure. Otherwise, I wouldn't talk about the other ones.
Right.
But really, it's whatever you can get a hold of, get it into the ground. I would say, when you're talking about cost, I'd say ryegrass is probably cheaper because you're going to put it, it's a much smaller seed, so you're not going to put near as much the poundage in. Wheat is also probably another cheap choice, because if you can find, you're not going to be using nice wheat seed, you're going to be using whatever you can find. And so bin run wheat is fine to put into a pasture if you can get it through the drill. So, you know, right now, it's not a bad time to fluff up those fields, get something in there. All this stuff, I mean, I'm not terribly worried about it carrying over because those cows are going to eat it out. They're going to be completely gone before they seed. So there won't be a whole lot of movement from one year to another. They won't become invasive because they can't, honestly. The cows are going to eat that before anything else. So, you know, right now you should plant. Get out in the fields and plant now. We have 2 days, 3 days before the rain. And this rain, hopefully, will be the perfect germination kind of rain. Fertilize later. Don't worry about that yet. We can fertilize after it germinates. You know, just 20, 30 pounds of nitrogen right after germination. We'll top dress again in the spring. So ideally, don't wait. If you can get out there, you got the drill ready, do it. So,
Do it now.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So one small grain that you didn't mention that we use a lot in forages is oats. And that can be planted up until like January.
Oh, wow.
So it's a real emergency forage booster right there. So we do have, K-State has a really nice fact sheet that spells out each one of these small grains and their use as forage and compares their pounds of production per acre. You know, barley, you can plant it, but sometimes its production starts a little faster than like wheat would. So you can compare all of those to the seed availability, what you can get a hold of, and then when you need pasture. So a really nice fact sheet that we have on that. Get a hold of James or I. We can get that to you. And you'll see that we've got lots of options on how to use this properly. So you can get this stuff in the ground and let it grow a little, turn your animals out on it to be grazed, or you can just, you know, whole field grazed. And that's one way to do it. But if you are able to rotational graze or strip graze, and I know that whenever I say those words, I hear my husband saying, oh my gosh, that's so much more work and expense of electric fencing and all of this and that. And yeah, it is, but it's a lot of expense to go to planting these forages. And if we can use those as best as possible, then we're going to get the best mileage out of them. So with strip grazing, we're essentially just moving the fence line out a little bit more, giving the animals just a little bit more access each day. Or with rotational grazing, that might look more like small paddocks that you're moving animals through. There are however many people are in the world, that's how many different ways you can graze these with electric fencing and use them properly. So if somebody is interested in that, I'm happy to work through those systems with them.
Might have to work with your husband on that too.
Yes, a little
talk
bit.
Talk him into it. Oh, that's great. Well, any other things that you're seeing right now that people need to be aware of as we kind of get into this transitional time of the seasons?
Yeah, so there are a lot of pastures out there that look really, really sad. A lot of people are frustrated with how things are going. So as James has already mentioned, our perennial grasses, they're going to be slow to recover if they do. But we cannot say that things are already, you know, dead on arrival. We can't announce that quite yet. I've seen some fescue areas that, you know, if they haven't had grazing pressure for 3 years, they look great right now. So it's really going to depend on how those different pastures have been utilized, how many times those fescue plants tried to come out of dormancy and then got grazed off by cattle or deer, and then they weren't able to put any nutrients down to their roots to replenish those nutrients. So in the same situation with Bermuda this next spring, whenever it's time for that stuff to start greening up, you know, it might be slow. Those nutrients did not make it to the root systems like they should have because we've been in such a dry situation. So be patient. This is a really important time to get out there in those pastures and make for sure that you're looking at the plants you have and really give some TLC to pastures.
What about the hay situation? Has there been any improvements you've seen with that, or is it still as bad as it's been?
Yeah, so refer to our earlier conversation about planting forages now. Yeah, there's still severe hay shortages. I was looking at the prices yesterday. We're still very, very high on pricing. So if you are selling hay, just make for sure that you know, if it's soybean hay, which is not typical for our area at all, consider, you know, writing out what all herbicides were used, because if Enlist, it's the one off the top of my head that I know is zero grazing or zero forage options, but Roundup, that has an 8-week time frame where you can use that on the beans, but then use it for animals. So it just really depends on what all has happened to those plants. If there's hay out there that has Johnson grass in it, we're not supposed to transport that. It's supposed to stay in the fields that it came from. So there's the hay situation, it's the Wild West. That's my catchphrase for the hay markets.
Everything is being hayed right now. Everything is hay. No matter what it is.
In Kansas City, I was there a couple weeks ago, and they were haying like stuff in front of the hotel. Like, it was absurd. Like, they're just like random parts of town. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah.
They're like three bales sitting there.
Nice.
Like, okay, great.
And that'll probably go for like $50 a bale.
Right? People are just doing all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, it is a tough situation. But, you know, like I said, we're doing everything we can.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, here in Montgomery County, the Conservation District does have equipment that folks can use. So if you are interested in doing some of this interseeding into your current pastures, call up there to the Montgomery County Conservation Office. They have a no-till drill, and they have quite a few other pieces of equipment.
You can probably use their rollers as well,
depending
on what seed you're planting. So.
So definitely don't let that be the barrier to you not getting some forage in the ground.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. Well, anything else we need to know?
No, really, it's just okay. Carrying on. I'm happy we're getting at least some rain.
I know.
At least in the forecast. And I've been checking the forecast
like every couple of minutes. I'm like, oh, is there any updates? It's very exciting. So, looking like we're going to have some good rain here in southeast Kansas and northeast Oklahoma. So. Very good. Well, James Coover, Wendy Powell, thank you so much again for joining us. I look forward to the next time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, and we'll be right back here with an early edition of Open Line here on the Mighty 690.